with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minutes past the hour on this, the third day of March 2014, at least in most parts of the country. Welcome to what it looks like when March comes in like a lion, if that old adage can be said to even be remotely applicable anymore in the era of global climate catastrophe. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you will find, among other things, the chat room. It's free and easy to register for. I'm popping in there now, even as we speak. And I'm sure we will have more visitors to the room in short order. But Jan's already there. Jugapunch is there. Longtime moderators Lottie and Sparky are already there. Truth Seeker's there. Will from Chicago is there. Will, fresh off what I hope was a wonderful birthday weekend, is there. You will also find at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com our spiffy new media player, which we encourage you to use unless you're on a tablet device or or smart device of some sort, in which case we recommend the apps from TuneIn Radio and from Stitcher Internet Radio, either of which work quite well, but please be advised that the advertisements that you may hear thereon or see thereon have absolutely nothing to do with the funding of the Horn. We don't get any money for that. Well, if you happen to hear an ExxonMobil ad, you can rest assured it was not booked by us here. We wouldn't take their money under any set of circumstances, of which I am aware. If they walked up and said, hey, Bob, you know, we'd like to advertise on the Horn, but only so long as you continue to call us the bunch of money-grubbing, planet-destroying freaks that we are, well, then we'd probably have to sit down and talk. But anyway, you get the idea. Also at the Horn, you will find a daily selection of news, which we hope you will find interesting. And, of course, at the Horn website, the ever-present PayPal button, and as well as the traditional mail address. I'll repeat that for you now. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. That's how you send in checks, money orders, things like that. Please remember, don't make them payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not receive the money and they do not inure to my benefit. It is a matter of keeping this going. Then, of course, there's the PayPal button, which is easy and just a click away if you'd like to use PayPal. And, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, forgot that part. We have, again, this month of March with Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Shirley has, even though they have had 43 consecutive days, 43 consecutive days of below zero temperatures, Shirley managed to make it to the mailbox to put down her monthly challenge. So, as it stands, the challenge is on the table for $150 for anyone who is willing to match the same, i.e., 10 at 15, 15 at 10, 2 at 75, 3 at 50, and there's the first 50 of the 3 at 50. Thank you very much, Randy, for your Randy's always in there at the first of the month. So we need to raise another $100 this evening to match Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. and hopefully that will happen in fairly short order. And thank you very much for keeping all of this going. This is a month-to-month undertaking, and that's how it has to be. So hopefully, Shirley will find her usual contingent of friends who will then meet her challenge, the first third having been met. So that's where that is. This, of course, beyond being the third day of March 2014 and beyond having some bad weather across the United States, still does not, I think, rise to the level of that whole Snowmageddon thing that was pushed and hustled all over creation last week by that Linkbait guy. No. We got about 5-6 inches of snow on the ground, but it's not unusual to get 5 or 6 inches of snow on the ground in March. I can remember more than that. I remember the couple of months, it was March, as a matter of fact, March of 1993, as Agnes and I were getting ready to say our nuptials, and got something like a foot of snow at the time. We also had the flu at the same time, which was a real, that was a bonus. And then the house where we were living, the walked down, you know, burning up with fever, eating up with flu, to find about 4 inches of water sitting in the kitchen, not the same place we're living now. The snow had compacted so heavily upon the roof that when it began to melt, some leaks developed themselves. Oh, well, you'll have that, especially in old farmhouses in Appalachia. But I guess we're going to get a couple more days of this stuff. And then we can maybe start toying with some idea of spring. Here in the hills and hollers, we're expecting a low tonight of 2 below. Not 2 below, but 2 below. And we are expecting a low tomorrow night of 0. And then the lows, the highs and the lows begin a little into the mercury. Thank you very much. An anonymous contributor from out west has just taken care of the second third of the two-thirds of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. So that leaves only $50 to go. Thank you very, very kindly. It is Monday, and you know what Mondays mean around here. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we have plenty of more than adequate subjects for that for which our Mondays are routinely devoted.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Morans of all shapes, sizes, stripes. Morans. Morans more than you yourself can comprehend. Right-wing Morans. Libertarian Morans. John Bircher Morans. Repiglican Morans. Teabagging Morans. Birther Morans. Deather Morans. Tenther Morans. Booger-eating Morans all. Yes, indeed, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you too can peer behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas and hear Moranity, well, that will set your skin to crawling. We advise folks to hang on to bags and little children, as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. This is sort of a double-barreled Moran, and with an understanding that not all Morans are always right-wing Morans. Sometimes the simple act of cluelessness can get one a nomination on Moran Monday. And in this case, I think we have to include... Yeah, we just kind of do. We have to include Secretary of State John Kerry. Gives me no joy to do this. None whatsoever. But reality is what reality is. And, of course, this has to do with the unfolding crisis in Ukraine and the apparent
desire of Russia to have a redo on that whole Crimean War thing, which I sincerely hope we don't decide to do. I mean, nobody... one charge of the Light Brigade is enough. You know what I mean? But apparently we do have people in this country who are just itching to get their war on. Now, naturally, the people who are itching for some warfare are not the same people who would go and fight it. It is seldom the case that that works out that way. Chicken hawks are, after all, chicken hawks, and that's why. But the United States is trying diplomatically to fend off some of the ugliness that could easily get badly out of hand in Ukraine. What with Vladimir Putin. You remember that? It's what George Bush called him. That was his pet name for him. He looked into his soul and got a real good look and said, "I think we can do business with Pooty Poot." So, enter Secretary of State John Kerry, who has gone off to the Ukraine to try to defuse the situation. He showed up on NBC. To explain the administration's position. And, you know, he's a smart man. I mean, he's a far cry from torture boy Gonzalez, that's for sure. But let's check in with John Kerry and hip hop posse member of the Rove Bunch, David Gregory.
So for the past 10 days, administration officials and the president himself have basically said to Russia, don't do this or else. Here just Friday, the president laying it out when he spoke to Vladimir Putin.
The United States will stand with the international community in affirming that there will be costs for any military intervention in Ukraine.
Now you've called this an invasion. So what are the costs?
Well, we're now discussing all of the options.
Well, David, if I thought you had a brain cell to call your own, I might try to explain to you some of the more nuanced positions of this administration. However, since you are a shameless and pathetic hack with no more sense of what it takes to run a government than a hog knows about Easter go-to-meeting dresses, I think I'll just put out some platitudes for you, you moron. Do please, Secretary Kerry, continue.
Since this is an act of aggression that is completely trumped up in terms of its pretext, it's really 19th century behavior in the 21st century, and there is no way to start with that if Russia persists in this, that the G8 countries are going to assemble in Sochi. That's a starter. But there's much more than that. Russia has major investment and trade needs and desires. I think there's a unified view by all of the foreign ministers I talked with yesterday, all of the G8 and more, that they're simply going to isolate Russia, that they're not going to engage with Russia in a normal business-as-usual manner, that Russia is inviting opprobrium on the international stage. There could even be, ultimately, asset freezes, visa bans. There could be certainly a disruption of any of the normal trade routine. There could be business drawback on investment in the country. The ruble is already going down and feeling the impact of this. And this is not, you know, the reason for this, David, is because you just don't invade another country on phony pretext in order to assert your interests.
See, Secretary Kerry, you were doing a real good job till you got to that last sentence. What was that? What was that again? You don't just invade another country On a completely trumped-up street. What? I guess what we're saying to Russia is they shouldn't invade Ukraine on a completely trumped-up phony pretext. Because unless I'm just falling through some sort of little rip in the space-time continuum, we did that. We did that 10 years ago, was it? And I'm not even sure which phony pretext we were invading under when we went and caused the deaths of, say, a million or more Iraqi non-combatants. I mean, I got to admit, and I don't want to see him try. I don't want him to feel like it's a challenge or anything. But I got to admit, Pootie Poot has got a pretty steep hill to climb when it comes to slaughtering people on a phony trumped-up pretext of war. I mean, he's got George W. Bush to beat. And, of course, Count Dicula and Kinda Sleazy Rice goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken. And Paul Wolfowitz and Donald Rumsfeld and all that whole gang of people who should have spent the last 10 years pondering the nature of existence from the interior of a cell somewhere in The Hague, maybe, or at least standing in the dock and being confronted with the evils of what they did, what with starting a war against a country that had never raised so much as a... Yellowcake, damn it! And we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud, and what about curveball, and he killed his own people, and he tried to kill my daddy. Like I said, my friends, these are not phony trumped up photos of aluminum tubes. These are real threats. Because see, that's the problem with me. I mean, because what Secretary Kerry said was a true statement. A country that considers itself to be in some wise civilized should not invade another country just because it has a hard-on to do that. I mean, that's a really great way to have the whole world get really, really soaked in blood really, really quickly. I mean, mercy sakes. So, I don't know. What was he thinking? Was Secretary Kerry just speaking from his general understanding of morality and decency and how to run a country that beats me? Let's check that last line out again.
Ruble is already going down and feeling the impact of this. And this is not, the reason for this, David, is because you just don't invade another country on phony pretext in order to assert your interests.
Wow. That's what he really said. I've listened to it several times. I just wanted to check in and make sure. But, I mean, that was bad enough. And at least we have made efforts to end most of our involvement in Iraq and are having the devil's own time trying to figure out a way to end our involvement with Afghanistan, or I think more particularly that vast cache of rare earth elements that happens to sit under the dirt of Afghanistan. Okay. Enter the stupid. Because, well, if anybody's going to say anything, then the right wing has to come back with some with a fresh supply of unerringly idiotic commentary. And when you really, really, really want to make sure that you're putting the stupid out there in its most stupid possible light, I mean, restaurant quality ignorance, if you will, who better when beating the drums of war to go to than that hero of the battle for Tara? Who better than Lindsey Graham? Oh, mercy. Lindsey got around some yesterday. No, really.
Graham out and spoken very forcefully on Friday about consequences. The U.S. has made it clear that it disapproves of what Russia has done. You've been tweeting about strong statements. What more do you want from President Obama?
Wait, Candy Crowley wants to know what more Senator Lindsey Graham wants from President Obama. Well, I want him to step down. We've lived for far too long under the tyranny of that one in our White House. Mercy sakes, somebody get me the smelling salts. Oh. No, but let us let the hero of the battle of the fainting couch speak for himself.
Well, at this point.
Well, number one, stop going on television and trying to threaten thugs and dictators. It is not your strong suit. Every time the president goes on national television and threatens Putin or anyone like Putin, everybody's eyes roll, including mine. We have a.
Oh my goodness, we have a new Mercy sakes, we have a new political test in America, the Did It Make Lindsey Graham's Eyes Roll test. One wonders what else makes Lindsey's eyes roll. He doesn't lie. I guess, what is this here? But quit. Did you hear that? I heard that. Stop going on television and trying to threaten thugs and dictators. It's not your strong suit. Every time the president goes on national television and threatens Putin or anyone like Putin, everybody's eyes roll, including mine. Okay, you big, strong, fearsome man. Tell us more.
Weak and indecisive president that invites aggression. President Obama.
What?
And threatens Putin or anyone like Putin. Everybody's eyes roll, including mine. We have a weak and indecisive president that invites aggression.
A weak and indecisive president who invites aggression. I guess that's why thousands of people died on September the 11th, 2001, because George W. Bush was so butch. He wasn't George W. He was George W. Butch. I mean, he was strong and decisive and said things like, he tried to kill my daddy. Okay. But Lindsey's eyes are rolling, don't you understand? Of course they are. Of course. See if you've got anything else to say.
Do something.
Senator Durbin, I imagine you're going to disagree at least with the description of how President Obama has handled things.
Well, of course I disagree. You would expect the President of the United States to speak out against what Putin is trying to achieve here. We've got to remember that Putin developed his diplomatic finesse as the head of the Soviet secret police. And his idea of invading countries, occupying them, and really daring people to go to war is the tactics, those are the tactics of a bully. And what the president has done is speak out against them.
Fine, that's rather reasonable of you, Senator Durbin. There's every possibility that Senator Graham may have to come over and smack you in the face with a scented hanky. Jesus, but Senator Graham cracker was just getting warmed up. That's not all he said. Because he's got to paint that one in his White House as being, what did he say? Weak, ineffective. I mean, if he could just use the word he really, really wants to use, he'd use it and have done with it. But a little of that sneaked through, just a little teeny tiny bit of that sneaked through Senator Graham's curtain of log curtain, perhaps, squeaked out between the cracks in the boards there in the door of the log closet. No, he really said, this is a quote, he said that he called upon the President of the United States, who I might note, for those of us who have forgotten, if it's possible to forget, given the fact that we are constantly reminded by the right wings, the right wingers, the birthers, the deathers, the tenthers, the booger eaters, happens to have a little more melanin in his skin than, say, Lindsay does in heels. Mm-hmm. I mean, they quoted this in the New York Times. Really? Lindsey Graham, war hawk senator from South Carolina. Can't we just get some cadets to go and shoot something at Putin and get this thing going now? Maybe if you just bring maybe one of them Russian gunboats into Charleston Harbor, we could yell, fire! Yeah, do it for the Bonnie Blue Flag! Oh, fiddle-dee-dee, Rhett. No. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, really, called on the President of the United States, President Barack Hussein Obama, to, and I quote, create a democratic noose around Putin's Russia. Noose. Noose. Noose, 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 noose. Senator Lindsey Graham wants somebody lynched over this, yeah. We need to be create mercy. I do declare we need to create a democratic noose around Putin's Russia. Yes. I read that. I read that with no small amount of consternation. Because even after the monumental ass whipping that the South was given, even after the civil rights struggle, even after the country had to pass law after law after law to make them stop, you know, stop fooling with the nooses. Well, what was it? 2 weeks ago, the two or three students, freshmen at the University of Mississippi who hailed from Georgia, decided it would be great fun to put the Confederate part of the old Georgia flag over the face of the statue of James Meredith down to the University of Mississippi stand there in Oxpatch and put a noose around James Meredith's neck. 3 weeks! Tops! And there is a sitting member of the Senate of the United States from the state of South Carolina working the noose analogy. You have to admit, it's a little bit stunning. No, you don't. You have to admit, it's probably par for the course. Had Senator Graham been able to go on with his announcement, and then I suggest we burn the crops of his economy, and maybe put a chain around him and throw Mr. Putin figuratively in the Volga River attached to a cotton gin fan. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Noose. I wonder, is it just because I have Southern roots that I understand what's really going on when a dipshit like Lindsey Graham hauls out the noose analogy? Let's assume for a moment. I'm trying to think of a normal state that might have a Republican senator. Okay. There's the not any too bright senator from Wisconsin, Ron Johnson. And I mean, when I say not any too bright, I mean otne ute aitbre. If you one what I mean, like upid stay. Would Senator Johnson use a noose analogy? How about Senator Susan Collins from Maine? Would Senator Susan Collins, did I miss something? Is using the image of a noose something that everybody's just doing now? Or is it something mainly that Southerners still cling to? Old times there are not forgotten. Oops. Yeah. Noose. Wonder if that's why all them eyes are rolling from the nooses. Darlene with a note this evening. She, under the subject line, tradition. Aw, come on, Bob. John Kerry is keeping up the tradition of hypocrisy in our foreign policy. His predecessor did it all the time, too. These secretaries of state do a great job at emphasizing just how idiotic we are. I'm sorry, but whenever I hear Kerry's litany of possible catastrophes for Russia, I keep hearing in my head Bill Murray's line in Ghostbusters. Cats and dogs living together. Mass hysteria! Yeah, I get it. Jim noting, with regard to Pooty Poot, if I were he, I would absorb the Crimea, too, same as a huge aircraft carrier establishing control of the Black Sea. When he turns off the gas to the EU nations, the outcome is foregone. And that may be the way he responds. But notice the way that the global capitalism has responded. All right. You want to annex the Crimea? Yeah, you want a big chunk of the Ukraine? Fine, take it. We'll take a big chunk of the value of the ruble, and we'll ruin your stock exchange. Yeah, pretty nice stock exchange you got there, Booty Boot. Be a shame if something happened to it. Because, really, there is no such thing as community anymore. There's nothing but the global village, and there is no alternative. Well, on the other hand, you know, there's just all this talk about how the IMF, and I'm sorry, I'm of a certain age. Every time I read IMF, I think of Impossible Missions Force and Peter Graves and, you know, rubber masks that I guess look like Putin or the International Monetary Fund is, well, we're going to come up with an aid package for Ukraine. Hey, Ukraine, you might want to talk to, say, Ecuador, Argentina, anybody that's ever done business with the IMF. Yeah, might not be the best idea. Note coming in from Robert up over in Australia. Living in Australia, it's hard to relate to stories about snow. I've seen it once in my life. As a family, we went up to the snow country for a few days when I was a kid. Cold and wet is about all I recall. These days, it's something only the really well-off do. It all costs far too much, and it's all very hit and miss. Some years ago, the snow cover is massive. The other years, the only reason the slopes have any snow on them is because the snow machines are running 24/7. It'll be interesting to see what happens over the coming decades, whether snow becomes a regular feature right across southern parts of Australia, South Polar Vortex, or if it just disappears forever. These are indeed interesting times. Thanks very much, by the way, to Brian, who says, keep up the great work. Thank you very kindly. Well, not just me, but everybody else. Thank you very much, Brian. Thank you indeed. And our buddy Horst with a nominee for this Morin Monday woke up to this news this morning. Don't know if it's crossed your desk yet. Apparently we have a mass knife murder in China. Aside from the horrific nature of the incident itself, you know how much mileage the NRA and assorted protector woods. Oh, that's all. Toaster. You've gone pro. Protector woods. You know, freedom protector slash, yeah, protector woods. You know how much mileage the NRA and the assorted protector woods are going to get out of it. Yeah, well, yeah, where's that? Where's that new Surgeon General nominee now that a bunch of folks in China have been killed with a knife? Wonder if he wants us to all have to register our knives and take away our freedom that way, Do they? The security has, according to the BBC, security has apparently been tightened in Kunming, in the southwest of China. Several men and women burst into Kunming Station, southwest China, on Saturday, stabbing people at random and wounding more than 130. Officials have blamed separatists from the Xinjiang region for the attack. China's security chief, Meng Jianshu, has vowed all-out efforts to severely punish terrorists. There were at least 10 suspected attackers. 4 were shot dead. Eyewitnesses said the attackers used curved swords and meat cleavers to stab people at random. A parking attendant at the scene, identified only by his surname Chen, told Reuters news agency, "I saw 5 or 6 of them. They all had knives, and they were stabbing people madly over by the first and second ticket offices." A knife attack. And you'll note the story says, in which more than 130 people were wounded. Now, if only they had free Second Amendment freedom like we have here in America, it could be 130 dead. Wolverines! Yeah, because they don't have freedom. Michael pointing out, when you were trying to think of a pig senator from a normal state, I immediately began telepathically repeating, Ron Johnson, Wisconsin. Betazoid much? Obligatory Star Trek reference. Yeah, I know. I get. What were my other alternatives, though? I mean, Crapo and that other guy from Idaho are both loons, and Idaho is probably prone to using noose references. It was either Ron Johnson or Susan Collins. Because I mean, really. I'm not going to play my Rand Paul card for Republican and senator from a normal state. No. And what's his name from out in Missouri, Stan? He was kind of out too, because that's not a normal state either. So yeah, nooses. And it would be unfair since we're talking. Okay, I don't want to do the whole program on this, but it, you know, of course the Academy Awards are a big damn deal, right? Yeah. And no, I didn't watch. I was getting periodic updates from Agnes and Margie, who were watching. Of check this out, check this out, check this out. And then it was just all engines stop when Matthew McConaughey decided to get all gaudy in his, the way Margie described it to me is, Daddy, Matthew McConaughey just went all Tebow on the Oscars. But we'll leave that alone because that's been a simmering discussion on my Facebook page all day long. Because when I went and saw the acceptance speech and saw him thanking God and saying that it was scientifically proven that something about God, and, you know, whenever you hear scientifically proven and God, you kind of go, oop, here we go, get a net. But I got to thinking about all the things that God must have been too busy making sure that that Matthew McConaughey got an Oscar to take care of, things like, you know, a mother who gets poisoned water that keeps her from becoming a grandmother, or a little child dying of leukemia, or a house burning down in the cold, or a transgendered person getting nearly beaten half to death, or another person dying of HIV, since the movie that he won for, Matthew McConaughey, had to do with HIV and featured a prominent role for a person playing a transgendered individual. But, of course, no, God! Because he looks up to God. So that's where my mind went. But apparently the Oscars has become an outrage machine. People got pissed at Ellen. People got pissed at Chelsea Handler for not being funny, and I've never understood why anybody thought she was. But this one has to take the cake. And granted, he's kind of grandfathered out of actual competition for the for Moran Monday, but you can't hard. So, Cate Blanchett wins Best Actress. Matthew McConaughey wins Best Actor. Best Picture went to 12 Years a Slave. You can only imagine the kerfuffle that ensued. And the only reason I run this is because Flush Flimball seemed to sort of work the same theme as, say, Lindsey Graham.
It was an entirely, but very subtle, for the most part, there were exceptions where it was in your face, but mostly very subtle, political night. It always is. Everything to the left is political. And it was filled with self-satisfaction and pats on the back and how important they all are and how compassionate, giving, caring, you know, all of those adjectives.
What is he gargling in between? He's been taking voice lessons from Alex Jones.
They reserve exclusively to themselves and their goodness and their kindness and their decency.
Now, the thems and the theirs and the theys. Hollywood liberals. That's who he's talking about.
And all of that. And it was hokey in parts with Ellen DeGeneres passing out pizza to the first three rows and taking selfies and so forth and all that.
Yeah, because that's so been done. I mean, I was at the Syria Mosque, wonderful. I don't even know if it's still there in Pittsburgh. I was at the Syria Mosque in, like, 19... 90 when Jimmy Buffett came to town and he ordered 100 pizzas from Domino's and with them still in their box, frisbeed them out into the audience there at the Syria Mosque. So apparently somebody had been to that tour.
But I think there was no demonstrable political preaching from anybody, not anybody. Zip, zero, nada. And the closest was a joke that DeGeneres made in her monologue to open the program. Audio soundbite number 3, here
it is. Anything can happen, so many different possibilities. Possibility number 1, 12 Years a Slave wins Best Picture. Possibility number 2, you're all racists.
Remember now, all good comedy must be rated or rooted in truth. And this is what they all... If that movie didn't win, there's no way that movie was not going to win. If it was the only thing that movie won, it was going to win Best Picture.
And why? Oh, why? You, America's truth detector, with half your brain tied behind your back and frightening amounts of OxyContin coursing through your bloodstream. Why is that?
There was no way. It didn't matter if it was good or bad. I haven't seen it. It was...
Did anybody wonder? Did anybody think he had? I mean, just sitting there with his popcorn, munching away, chewing up the occasional OxyContin for the refreshing burst of flavor, flush, sitting there in the theater. With that woman he married and keeps in a pit who hasn't been seen for months, watching
it was going to win. It had the magic word in the title, slave.
Twelve Years a Slave had to win Best Picture, not because of the brilliance of its storytelling. Not because the gripping recreation of reality that it presented of a 160-year-old injustice. Not because it changed maybe the way people looked at that horrific institution. But because slavery and slave are a magic word. It's magic. Like, if you say it 3 times, oh, God. Yeah. So, with regard to the Oscars, Kate says, didn't watch, don't want to hear about it either. Moving right along. Dr. John noting, flush sounds terrible. I'm honestly concerned about him. I doubt he's trying to steal Alex Jones's shtick. Rush, buddy, see a throat doctor. Rush, buddy, don't. You're just fine, Rush. You don't need the doctor. But there you have it. From America's Truth Detector, the man with half his brain tied behind his back, the man with talent on loan from God, explains that the only reason 12 Years a Slave won Best Picture is because it had the magic word. You'll recall this is the same man who popularized a song parody called Barack the Magic Negro some years back. These people are filthy. They're absolutely disgusting. You ever wonder if maybe the Limbaugh family, being how they were from Missouri and all, owned slaves? Might be interesting to note. Dr. John pointing out, 12 Years a Slave was a striking movie because it refused to be about the past. You can't watch it and walk away without the anti-capitalist message. Treat people like commodities, and you dehumanize them, and yourself. And thus it has relevance in the modern world. But not for Flush, not for the right wing. Oh, no. The mere word slave has magical properties that will allow it to overcome any other film just because. Heaven's sakes. Robert in Australia. Is it Oscar time? The local TV networks don't even bother to show the Oscars anymore. It used to be a big deal years and years ago. Now it gets a few minutes on the news and that's it. You're probably the better for it, Robert. You really are. Diane in Kansastan, who notes Diane now in Kansastan, but pining for the Berg, says, under the subject line, Syria Mosque, I was living in Shadyside near the Syria Mosque in the Berg when it was demolished despite community protests to make way for a parking lot for the University of Pittsburgh. Oh, I didn't need to know that. It was a horrific decision. I thought that the city honored its neighborhoods more than that. Yeah, somewhere along the way I'd heard that was an awesome venue. And it really was a deconsecrated mosque, I think. I mean, it had all the architectural details, and the acoustics were wonderful, and it was a very warm and intimate venue. And naturally, Pitt needed a parking lot. My brother. So you get a little bit of a sense for some of the things that Moran Monday has in store for us. Your nominations are more than welcome, of course, and I encourage them. Because, well, just as Horst pointed out, you know, I don't get to everything. I do have a Moran nomination coming from, surprisingly, not the West Virginia legislature. The stupid is strong with these ones. And, well, don't give it all away. But you bring your nominees to the table for this Moran Monday. You know how. The number's 304-658-3333. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. If we've never connected, just send me a request, and, well, there you go, and there we are. Note coming in. No, the West Virginia legislature doesn't listen to the program, Texas Betsy. But that doesn't prevent us from providing nominations from the West Virginia legislature when they certainly and doggone well do earn one. Note coming in via Skype from our buddy Asa. Bob. See, okay, Asa's getting in on the act now. See what you start, Ron? Bob. Where do you get off calling a charming Southern belle like Lindsey Graham a dipshit? Jesus! I'm not going to call him Jesus either. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. Apparently he has his own movie now again. Really, there's the social media world is all a Twitter with the hashtag Hot Jesus. Because there's a new Jesus movie out. Ferg and I were trying to figure out something to do on Saturday, and he said, "Want to go to the movies?" I checked. There was really nothing showing. He says, "Well, we could go see that new Jesus movie," and you know what? He's developing some real talent for deadpan. I said, "No." And he said, "Dad, just kidding. Lighten up." He and I had gone out on a grocery run and just, you want it? Nah, nothing there. Ick. So, yeah, bring your Moran nominations on board as you wish. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Harvard said, sorry, something weird happened. The last time I watched the Oscars was the one with the streaker. Remember streaking? All too well. Entirely too well. So a little long-distance dedication going out to you, Flush Flimball. This is Moran Monday on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know, that was kind of a twofer, a summer reference and a magic reference in one tune. Sometimes I think the old DJ still got it. This is the Horn, Moran Monday. I'm Bob Kincaid, 7 o'clock straight up here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. Lights blinking. Got a couple of lines open if you want to jump into the conversation. Going to the phone straight away under the subject line, new Jesus movie? Dr. John asks, thinking back to last week, is this the one where he's a wingman slash wheelman combining the raw action of the French Connection chase scenes with the bro-y rom-com hijinks of the bachelor party plus a crucifixion? Sold! Nope, nope. This is the one where Jesus is played by a Portuguese actor who looks like a lot like Brad Pitt.
With a sexy eight-pack, just like Jesus had.
Yeah, thank you, Ferg. And I ain't going. Now, this is it's apparently a little less gory than The Passion, but and without the comic hijinks of, say, Mel Gibson. But no, the trailer was in the, all right. Son of God, that's the name of the movie. Son of God, son of yeah. Let's quit shilly-shallying about and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Mr. Kincaid.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm calling from South Carolina, and you is disparaging my senator.
I am terribly sorry. I hope you have not had to resort to the fainting couch and the smelling salts.
I'm on my fainting couch here. Shit.
I don't think Scarlett ever said shit.
It's Lib.
Yeah, what's happening, Lib?
Oh, my God. Spare him a new asshole, please.
No, why don't you? I mean, he's your senator.
Oh, God. I hope all of you caught my post yesterday on the Horn Facebook page. Yesterday was the 23rd anniversary of the end of Desert Storm.
I did see that.
For those who didn't, I'll briefly recount.
Do please.
I woke up in my sleeping bag on a cot beside the Deuce and a Half about 60 or 70 miles inside Iraq. When one of my workers came up and nuzzled me and said, "Hell, the war's over. We won, I think." It's like, "Shut up, girl. Let me go back to sleep." The sun was barely up. Lindsey Graham.
We have won the war.
Yeah, for all the good Southerners and shit. Lindsey Graham. In 1991, he was running for House of Representatives. His original internet bio listed him as a Desert Storm veteran.
Oh, I remember that. But didn't he lead from the rear or something?
He never left fucking South Carolina.
Well, that's I think that qualifies. So we have to say he is a Desert Storm era veteran.
A little nuance there, yeah, yeah. From somebody who had four hot showers in 7 months.
Yeah, it sounds like your sympathy quotient is way low.
Not much there. No.
What was he? He's a judge advocate general or something, right? I mean, wasn't...
he's a jagoff.
Yes, he is. But no, he's a lawyer, too. Ba-dum-bum. I'm sorry, I'll be here all week.
You know why they bury lawyers 16 feet down?
No.
Because deep down, they're really good people.
Yeah, you know why sharks don't eat them, too, right?
No.
Professional courtesy.
Oh, I should have saw that coming.
That's okay. But no, he's a, and he's a, he, so, you know, he's Air Force, and he's not a Roger Ramjet type. He's a,
No, he didn't. He's in the backseat, you know? He can't even crash as many planes as McCain did.
He's a worse pilot than Bush.
There you go.
But no, all kidding aside, who in this country, and I'm sure there, help me here, a little demographics or something, Lib, who takes this guy, what is wrong with the person who books these Sunday shows, who books him? How in heaven's name does this guy have any credibility whatsoever?
I'm actually advocating for Andrea Mitchell to take over Meet the Press. You may like her or not, but at least she has some fucking credibility.
Well, Barney the Daggum Dinosaur would be a step up.
Thank you very much. This bozo now, I mean, and he never even gets close to the fact that his wife was an executive vice president at Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or one of those and had to resign in disgrace.
Really?
Oh, yeah, you didn't know that.
David Gregory's?
Yes.
That's little old clueless me.
His wife was high up on that food chain and had to resign when it all went tits up. Excuse my French, ladies.
That's, yeah, term of art.
But, he's a whore from hell, you know. And hence, who do they book on those shows? Like prostitutes.
Well, if it's, you know, but then again, they've got a problem. And I try to manifest a little bit of sympathy here.
They have more than one, but.
But the problem they have with the Sunday shows is that if, and they don't feel particularly compelled to, say, book a whole bunch of Democrats or, I mean, why not just have one Sunday show that's Sundays with Bernie and just turn Bernie Sanders loose every Sunday if he's not busy? But no, it's the usual suspects. It's the Rand Pauls and John McCain's and Ted Cruz's and
the gay guy that retired. Oh shit, what's his name? From Massachusetts.
Scott Walker? Barney Frank.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I was just talking about trying the
Barney loose on these assholes. That would be worth watching.
Yeah, but no, what I was getting at though is if you're a booker on these Sunday shows, you have a real problem trying to find a sane Republican. I mean, just you know, taking the blackjacks and brass knuckles and handshake buzzers and whoopee cushions away from them before they get on set is probably a full-time job.
I disagree. I think they go for the most insane ones because that's going to be the show.
I mean, you know, it's gotten really bad when it's left to Chris Wallace to call out Daryl Issa. Did you catch that?
Yes, I posted that today. If you're not watching my Facebook page, you're really missing out because I post about 50 different articles a day. That's like my full-time job now that I'm comfortably settled into my small abode. We call it Fort Living Room. And I love retirement. Retirement is so good. But, when Chris Wallace gets to the point of actually calling Daryl Issa out on his bullshit, stick a fork in him.
That or look up in the sky and see if there's a star in the east because a miracle has transpired.
Yeah. It's like, huh? That happened? Shit. You know?
Yeah, who knew? Well, it's awful good to hear from you. And by the way, you do a very good outraged South Carolina Southern Belle, by the way, Liam.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Oh, mercy sakes. You have a good night.
Well, everybody.
At least you don't have 6 inches of snow on the ground, right?
Not yet. The wind's been blowing, and the trees have been knocking around, and something nasty, and the cats are all fucking pissed off.
Well, that, you keep them happy above all things. Take care, Liv, and have yourself a good night.
Y'all be good.
We're going to try. Bye now.
Bye.
Liberal from South Carolina, who apparently, yes, understands the true nature of Lindsey Graham. Lines open 304-658-3333 or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, and we continue apace. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, I'm still chuckling. 16 feet deep, huh?
Deep down, they're really good.
Well, what I had heard years ago is you couldn't bury a lawyer. You buried him standing up by screwing him into the ground. That was another popular tag in years gone by. Yeah, I wish I hope I can somehow or other get at least to hear the dialogue of the movie. Because, and I heard a guy this morning, Bob, a talk show host, sports talk show host, he was griping about that the slave situation winning the Academy Award. He didn't like it. He preferred comedies and such. Okay, fine. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, what we need is a real, if they would have, well, it's like that old line from W.C. Fields, The Bank Dick. You might be familiar with it.
Yeah, but which one?
It's no longer an English living room drama. Now it's a circus picture.
Yeah, well.
That's what we need. That's a rollicking screwball slavery comedy.
You know,
maybe with a pair of slave buddies.
When you read enough Civil War stuff, you think you've got a handle on this stuff. Until you get into it even deeper, and then it's the handle reaches out and smashes you across the face.
Well, no, what we're seeing here is that it is a sort of resurgence of we can have our fun, Bill, and we can make fun of these unreconstructed racists and bigots and what have you. But in the final analysis, what we're talking about are people who are desperately trying to cling to and reassert their white privilege.
Yep.
And so that's why they run around saying things like, well, I fly the Confederate battle flag because it's a function of my heritage. Or, the Civil War wasn't really about slavery. It was about economics.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you've ever gotten into it with any, you know, you can't go very long without having some proto or, you know, neo-Confederate is what they are, say something like, it wasn't really about slavery. It was about the tariffs. Mm-hmm, yes.
Well, if you want to go even deeper, it was about M-O-N-E-Y.
Absolutely.
Because that word trumps anything.
Well, because the vast amount of M-O-N-E-Y or W-E-A-L-T-H that the Southern aristocracy had was tied up in owning human beings.
Yep.
And so I think that makes what Dr. John said especially noteworthy, that with 12 Years a Slave, he says you can't watch it and walk away without the anti-capitalist message. You treat people like commodities, and then you dehumanize them and yourself in the process.
Well, to some degree, this is what's going on right now. It's a lot less, I don't know, vivid. Maybe let's put it that way. It's something you can't. It's something that's not slapping you across the face like owning another human being is, but it's a little more subtle way of the same thing, Bob. Don't tell me that the way they treat the environment, especially in your home state, isn't an example of what these guys think money gives them the privilege to do.
Well, I think you're tapping into something really important there, Bill, because it's a fact. If you have abused people, it won't be long before they start abusing something else, whether it be the land or the family dog or cat or each other. I mean, West Virginia, Appalachia, has a long history of what we now refer to as domestic abuse. Some of the things that have become stereotypes became stereotypes because they had a certain rooting in reality. We are known in this region for incredibly strong women. And the women had to be strong in order, in many instances, to hold a family together because daddy was either crippled up from the mines, or if he was crippled up from the mines, he might have resorted to self-medication of the 80 to 120 proof variety.
Yep.
And then he gets to brooding on things, and the next thing you know, somebody taking a whooping.
And, Bob, this covers a lot of people in this country. Did you ever hear what an Irish theater party was?
No.
Oh, you stood out in the lawn and watched the neighborhood Irish drunk beat up his family.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing about humor, alleged humor, is you can cover anything you want to cover with it. And you and when they hit you, there's more to it. It's not a real laugh. It's a cheap, you know.
Yeah, and you know, to the extent that we still have horrible problems in Appalachia today, they are in many ways the great grandchildren of the horrible problems of three or four or five generations ago.
Well, when I was a kid in the projects, my one neighbor downstairs, who was a very nice guy, he's the guy who, in many ways, was a chronic reader. He turned me on to the Holden Caulfield
Catcher in the Rye.
When I was about 13, he turned me on to that. And, of course, he also was a big fan of people like Vert Halliday, the Mike Shane author. And, you know, the guy read like a machine. But he also, Muscatel, which was the most popular beverage.
Yes. Goes great with a little 7-Up or Sprite.
Well, yeah, in my generation, it was the old phrase, what's the word? Thunderbird. What's the price? 30 twice. It went on and on, you know. That was the thing about living in a funky neighborhood, man. You think you learned, maybe I learned too soon, and maybe that's why I was at 15 or 16, was an avid cynic of the worst order. And, you know.
I think you earned it fair and square, Bill.
Oh, yeah, it had its moments. I there was a gang of kids down there. If I was cornered by three or four of them, you can't fight four of them, Bob. You can take down one and then the rest.
You can try real hard, but there's an ass-kicking coming.
Yeah. I guess what got me to get the hell out of school, get a job, and find a new place to live. I went back and took the so-called GED test and got my high school degree that way. And I was gifted. I finished in the upper 10% in reading and comprehension. And I ain't bragging. You know, it's understood. It's just that's what gave me whatever brains I have came out of some book somewhere. When I cut school, they knew where to find me. Go down to the public library in downtown Cleveland. You'll see the guy sitting in the history department with his nose in something. Because learning was not the problem I was having. The way they taught us was, Catholic high school, you had to learn Latin, for instance. Why? It's not a bad thing to know. You know it.
It's a great thing to learn.
Yeah.
Because then you could go...
pretty heavy, you know.
Well, then you can go and read stuff for yourself, because as I was trying to explain the other day, it's one thing to read somebody's translation of something. It's another thing to dope it out for yourself.
True, true. Well, with me, it's given me a half a dozen books on the same subject, and maybe I'll be able to, after you wade through them, you may get a consensus of what actually happened.
That's one of the better ways to go after it.
Well, I'm working a thing, one of the latest studies, it's called The Valley of Death. It's one of the more recent studies of D&B and Fu in the French War in Indochina. And the most interesting part toward the end is the maneuvering by Dulles, John Foster Dulles, and his brother and a few other people, of trying to get us nose deep in Indochina.
Yeah, because if we could just get going there, all the fun could really get started.
Yeah, we could stop those communists.
Do you think they bought the baloney that they were selling, Bill? I mean, really?
No, they wanted you to, though. That was what we were supposed to buy. And they were ready. I mean, we had this Operation Vulture where they were going to take B-29s and dump all kind of explosives on the Viet Minh, as they were called. We called them the Viet Cong, but the original name was Viet, M-I-N-H.
The Viet Minh.
Yeah. The people who followed Ho and General Yep and Jap or whatever his name was. I can never get a pronunciation on that one either. But, and the French in Vietnam were at Indochina, foreign legionnaires, Bob. A lot of guys who from the same homeland that I can trace most of my family back to, good old Germany. A lot of these guys who were fighting over there. Hell, there was a small group of guys that had fought against Franco in the Spanish Civil War. And when that ended, they didn't know what to do with themselves, so they joined the Legion. Hell, they fought in North Africa against the British and then alongside the British. You know, it's amazing. Some people, this is all they knew how to do was fight. And we were doing the same thing. I never remembered in my life a thing like Blackwater, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The American professional paid mercenary soldiers. That's something I never heard a word about until more recent times. But that's a whole... The longer I live, the more I learn, and maybe that's what keeps me going. And then that and dedicated listeners to Horn, who said, he doesn't sound like himself tonight. Well, I'm glad I didn't, because I must have been all over the map.
One of these days, when you're really, really up to it, we'll cut you out the audio and you can hear.
Yeah, well, if I ever get to, right now I don't even have email. I'm waiting for the weather to break.
Seems like that's been rather a long wait, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, my other computer is up and running. My buddy put a new hard drive in it, and he's got all that software from this. And I know it's not going to be very effective for modern stuff, the one that they're cutting out, you know?
Right, yeah.
But on the other hand, for what I use it for, it might be quite effective until, you know, I got a day tomorrow to go down and speak on a public radio show about this thing my buddy Colin's doing.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, if you think so. I do not like it much.
You'll be great.
Well, yeah, bullshit artist from the word go, I said. BSA, which is a good English motorcycle.
Was.
And something that...
I don't know. Are they still made? I don't know.
I don't know. I know most of my friends who were serious long-distance bike riders, BMWs, is what they had. The Cadillac of the, you know, the especially long-distance. My one buddy gets on that thing with his wife in a trailer, and they go across country every year, and it's on it. Amazing.
I never knew that BSA stood for Birmingham Small Arms.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
I guess they started out as a gun manufactory.
I keep forgetting that there is a place called Birmingham, England, yes. It's funny how much... Well, let's face it, where did the founders of this country come from? Basically, the British Isles.
Sure.
What kills me is the Civil War, German-Americans, the 11th Army Corps and the Army of the Potomac, they called them Dutchmen, the rest of the people. And they had not a really good reputation as Army people, which, when they're, you know, they're German extraction, that kind of twists the pretzel, doesn't it? Because one thing those guys were good for in World War One and Two was finding ways to off somebody else. But anyway,
you must be following the Crimean business with no small amount of interest.
Oh yeah, what was the? Well, George McClellan went over there and studied and wrote about that mess. That was a charge of the Light Brigade, wasn't it? That's what came out.
That's
of that.
Yeah. That's the only two things come out of the Crimea for me historically, and it's because of the limitations of my knowledge. Florence Nightingale and the Charge of the Light Brigade.
Yeah, Florence Nightingale also. Yes. I mean,
but it was also what was it? The early 1850s when it broke. It was also the first substantially journalistically reported
conflict.
War.
What the hell was it about, Bob? Can you tell me why the hell they got mixed up in it? Who was trying to grab the exit to the Black Sea?
Well, that's the geographical flavor of it, but it had to do with Russia wanting to, you know, for how many centuries was the Ottoman Empire referred to as the sick man of Europe?
Yeah, many.
Okay. And the Russians thought that maybe they could shove around the Ottoman Turks and take out everything all the way down to
Constantinople.
Yeah, down to Constantinople.
Yeah, that was a
which was still known as Constantinople at the time. It was not changed until like 1930 something to Istanbul.
Yeah, Istanbul. Yeah.
But then in the midst of that, there was also some of that. Well, you know, siblings will be siblings. There was some rivalry between Roman Catholicism and Orthodoxy.
Orthodoxy, yeah. Yep.
So the French were standing up for the honor of the Roman Catholic Church, and the Russians were standing up for the honor of the Orthodox Church. And why not get it? And the British said, well, if, you know, is this a personal fight, or can just anyone join in? And the next thing, and so France, Britain, the Kingdom of Sardinia,
yep,
and the Ottomans allied against the Russians.
Well, what really kills you is check the royal families in 1914, and check the relationships. The Kaiser, the Tsar, and the English king were all cousins, were they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The funeral for Edward the Hoosus?
Yeah.
Which was like 1911 or something, and they were all there together in one spot. And, wow, just think, if you dropped a big enough bomb, you could have avoided all the massive deaths of the First World War.
Families, man. It's unbelievable, the power struggle. That Central Europe is very much unknown to the average American. The power struggles that went on I have a good buddy who I've made in the last 5 years who's Ukrainian. He's been able to fill me in on a lot of the background stuff. And, oh, brother. If you give human beings half a chance, they'll figure out a good reason to kill each other. Don't ask me why. I'd love to see the statistics.
Well, the thing is, if you dig deep into anthropology, especially with some of the more modern stuff that Dr. John has pointed out to me, state warfare or organized mass warfare is not necessarily the de facto human condition.
I hope not.
But once you get into state level organization, there's always somebody who has a lot more power than a lot of other bodies, and you can say, come on, let's you and him fight.
Yeah. Yep. They find a way to do it, don't they? I'd love to see some of the statistics. You know, the Russians and the Turks, what were they fighting, in the Caucasus? I'd love to see some of the statistics of casualties from that part of the world. Because you can find out the other stuff. I mean, everything, as far as our teachings about World War One, the only thing that was important was the so-called Western Front. And yet the Italians and Austrians were killing a million of each other.
Yeah, they were butchering each other out of hand, sure.
Yeah, in the Alps, in the foothills. The British launched an attack in 1917, where they gained 4 miles at the cost of about 500,000 casualties. Let me get out of here. I'm Mr. Happiness, as usual, spreading joy everywhere he goes.
Little ray of sunshine.
Well, I'll tell you what pleasured me was Collins put together a CD of a bunch of Cleveland bands, and he had me doing a couple things that he borrowed from a friend of mine, and one of them was a Charles Brown piece that I lifted courtesy of James Cotton, a thing called Black Knight, and I played chromatic harmonica on it, and man, I heard it the other day, and I said, Jesus Christ, Bill, you could get around that thing, couldn't you? Because you know how it is, you do something long enough, you don't impress yourself anymore. If you have, you know, at least you try not to. You don't want to, you know, it's the old joke about the guy got his head stuck in the door. It was so inflated he couldn't get it through, you know. Anyhow, take care, but you guys are on the money because, as I say, I heard a sports talk show host downing the picture, you know, and you could smell it. You could smell the racism on the guy.
Oh, it sounds like it might have been, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's notorious for putting, he does sports talk and puts out really stupid stuff.
Well, this is a local guy.
Oh, okay.
And he's not bad when it comes to sports. His father used to sit at a desk as a wrestling announcer. Yeah, I mean, I was lucky, Bob. At one point, the one channel was carrying the Saturday afternoon wrestling matches, which were the dress rehearsal to build a crowd for the following Thursday. And the announcer was an Australian guy who would have you believe his name was Lord Layton. Lord, huh?
Yeah, you bet.
After you watched a few of those matches, you sat around and said, Lord, 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 how can they get away with this?
you were asking about the casualties and losses from the war.
The Turks and Russians, yeah.
Estimated 95,000 to 175,000 dead from the Ottoman Empire. 95,000 dead French. 21,000 dead British.
Yeah.
2,000 dead Sardinians, as compared to 220,000 dead Russians.
Yeah.
Now here's where it gets interesting. And this is where it became somewhat prophetic, if you will. Because, again, this is 1853 to 1856, right? So the world would take a little breather for about 5 years.
Yep.
And then we'd crank up another one.
Bring it over.
On the other side of the Atlantic. So of the French dead, 95,000, right?
Jesus.
10,240 are KIAs.
Mm.
20,000 are dead of their wounds.
Yep, because there was... Those things were fatal in those days, for sure. They're not good
60,000 die of disease.
Yeah, that's another thing, yeah.
Among the, and we don't even have a breakout for the Ottoman troops. Just 95 to 175,000 dead, because nobody was really counting.
Well, during our Civil War, did you ever follow the eating habits of the guys in the field?
Oh, yeah. Horrible.
Here's a piece of salt pork and a ramrod. Heat it up. And here's some hard bread with extra meat. Weevils.
Yeah, and that was the good stuff. Get this. Of the Russians, 80,000 KIA, 40,000 dead of wounds, 100,000 dead of disease.
Jesus Christ.
And oddly enough, now that's, again, 1853 to 1856, that's a total of about 600,000 dead. In roughly the same time span, 5 years later, you would see almost identical numbers.
Yeah. What was it, 600,000 here?
Yeah. And
a population of, what, 30 million plus a few hundred thousand?
Yeah, and so you've got that same 600,000 number out of the Crimean War.
Yeah. Well, weapons were changing.
And yet, with horrifying numbers like that, Bill, with horrifying numbers like that, no one in the world could figure out that maybe there might be possibly a better way than lining a bunch of people up across from each other and blazing away to sort out family differences in the European case, between a bunch of people who were all from the same family.
Well, I just wonder where the money was going. Because somewhere along the line, the old follow the money argument jumps out at you.
Sure. And don't think for a minute that the people who had significant financial interests in the industries of war didn't make out like bandits.
Of course. Of course. It still goes on to this day, Bob. There's arguments about...
But it's fascinating to read about because there were... I mean, my goodness gracious, what does it say here? Let's see. Danube campaign, Black Sea theater, Crimean campaign, Azov campaign, Caucasus theater, Baltic theater, White Sea theater, Pacific theater.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that thing was trying really hard to bust out into a full-scale global conflict. And I guess the only thing that stopped it from being able to do so was technology and geography.
Well, the one thing that got my goat was the German and American fleets almost squaring off in the Pacific over the fact that we took the Philippines from the Spaniards and the Germans wanted it.
Well, you know, there's another question to ask out of this too, in light of the timing, 1853 to 1856. I don't have the expertise to address it, but it's hard not to see those dates and remember the massive European revolution, largely failed, of 1848.
Yeah, that's what brought a lot of the guys who served in the 11th Army Corps, the Dutchmen, as they were called. That's how they ended up coming over here. There was a big influx of Germans along with, of course, the potato famine Irish. You know, the guys that weren't supposed to apply for anything?
But it winds up in a massive immigration into the so-called New World. And it's interesting that France and Britain and Sardinia and the Ottomans get into this, but somehow or another the Germans managed to stay out.
Yeah, how the hell did that happen?
I'm guessing maybe there was some brains at work there. Because the way that plays out is that, you know, France once again guts herself.
Yep.
And lo and behold, that ends in 1856. What year was the debacle at Sedan?
1870 war.
Yeah. So that's 20 years and not much in the way of lessons learned.
Well, that was the one that brought my great-grandfather from my mother's side to this country.
Yeah, who decided not to roll the dice again.
Yeah, he had done it twice, 1864 against Denmark and I think 66 against Austria. And they were gearing up to go to war, and they would find a place for him. Maybe he wasn't a combat front-line guy anymore, but you could do something. You could drive a mule team or, you know, whatever. But you could do something with that uniform, and eventually, if they needed manpower enough, they'd grab you. It's like me. They didn't want me in 1961 at age 18 for various and sundry reasons. They said, nah, because they were rejecting 25% or more of all draftees in the state of Ohio when we were allegedly at peace between Korea and Vietnam. They didn't need the bodies because that cost money, you see. And, of course, when we got rolling in Vietnam, they're calling me up. Well, we can change your classification. No, you can't, you son of a... you know.
I want to see you try.
Yeah, because by that time I got into that stuff so heavy as a kid that I thought that the joining the Army and becoming an officer was a real, real ticket to ride, Bob. You know, it's funny how you... Yeah, well, I got into music, so how smart was I? It was one or the other, you know. The bullets flew a lot faster in war than they did in the bar. Anyway, I'll let you go.
All right, you have a good evening, Bill. It's awful good talking to you. Stay warm.
Yeah.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland, and he opens a lot of doors. And I guess for the historically inclined, it's hard not to look at the present situation in Ukraine and not see a few ghosts walking around. And it's kind of like what it's kind of like the email that Jim sent a little bit ago. I get the sense that most people in the U.S. Think, well, their sensitivities or their sensibilities lie with the Ukrainians in wanting to be big old quotes free unquote. Because we think here in the United States that we are the de facto defenders of freedom. Never mind the fact that, as has been previously noted on this program, that has devolved into the freedom to choose between 29 different flavors of breakfast cereal, but pretty hardcore in terms of other freedom. You know, the real kind. But, you know, Jim said earlier in email, if he were Putin, he would absorb the Crimea, too, as the Crimea is a huge aircraft carrier establishing control of the Black Sea. And, I mean, you know, that peninsula just sticks out into the Black Sea. And if you're Russia, you can get really, really worked up about water that doesn't freeze every winter and lock your navy into somewhere inhospitable. The problem is that if we in the United States look at it long enough, and you know, no hate mail, please. This is just trying to understand history. We had a time in this country when a region that fronted our southern warm water seaports decided that they wanted to go their own way. I mean, they now granted they had some odious institutions and some quirky ways and weren't much interested in the advancement of science or technology or industry and had a real fondness for agrarianism as long as somebody else was practicing it. But they said, you know, we want to be free. And the response of the rest of the nation was, no, you're Americans like the rest of us, and we're willing to shoot a few hundred thousand of you to prove the point. And the judgment of history, of course, is that the United States was right in not dealing gently with treason, which secession was. It is not a direct one-to-one comparison, but it's close enough to give one pause. Ukraine is a huge country sitting on the southern border of, well, sorta Russia and Belarus in the middle. But what would, and please, no flip answers. No, let them go, hail. None of that, please. What would we do if Texas decided to go its own way? Now, we're not talking about the Confederacy, just Texas. Texas just wants to be Texas. Would we sit still as, say, they overran Fort Hood, a federal installation? Would we just lump it if they took over, say, the Johnson Space Flight Center in Houston? Or declared the oil refineries along that toxic coast to be property of the Republic of Texas? Because it seems kind of out there, but it's worth pondering. Can you imagine the mass out-migration and in-migration? What would happen to Texans who wanted to remain a part of the Union? It's not as easy as the hotshot rhetoric of a Lindsey Graham portends. Not by any stretch of the imagination. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, is it cold enough for you?
If it's not, it's going to get colder. I didn't order this up. Are you, did you send in the bill, Jim?
I did. Yes, I did. I put it on my American Express.
Curse you.
Oh, well. Anyway, they've got a new program out. I'll get extra points for it. No, you were going on about the secession thing. I mean, look, the Ukraine has been a pain, you know, ever since World War II. I mean, when the Nazis invaded Ukraine, a lot of Ukrainians under some nationalist fool named Stephen Bandera took sides with Germans. So, I mean, they've had their problems, but Ukraine, effectively, and I'm going to get hate mail for this, but I don't give a shit, they effectively belong to the Russian Republic, as does the Crimea and the rest of the former republics, because that's exactly what Mr. Putin is wanting to establish or reestablish. He wants the old Soviet Union back.
Without the trappings of the names and the...
Well, I mean, just the shit they had after that thing, the Commonwealth of Independent States, please.
Yeah, well, that was the Articles of that was the historical equivalent of our Articles of Confederation, wasn't it? Didn't work too well.
No, it did not. As a matter of fact, everything went to hell. I mean, God knows you have so many Russian scientists affecting whomever give them the most money and stuff like that. But you know, as long as you know, I can deal with the Russians. I know what they're about. I understand what their mentality is. I deal with them. I could deal with them, and I respect them very much.
Although it is a little bit creepy, Jim. Did you see what someone on the inside of the German government said about Putin and his government right now?
So much has been said, I may have mislaid it.
After a phone call between Angela Merkel and Putin, someone inside the German government said that, Chancellor Merkel said she wasn't sure Putin was in touch with reality.
Hmm.
And the last time we heard that said about a Russian leader, they were talking about Boris Yeltsin being drunk all the time.
Listen, Putin is more in touch with reality than anybody in the world. He knows what he wants, he knows how to get it, and he will have it.
And economically, he wants that not so much to put a finger in the eye of Western Europe, I'm guessing, or put a finger in the eye of the United States, for that matter, but rather to serve as a hedge against, reconstitute the old Soviet Union as a hedge against the economic power of the Chinese.
Oh, well, I mean, listen, they're in bed together right now. And besides, the very bread that you're getting off your shelves, a lot of that grain comes from the Ukraine. They export all over the world, and Russia needs that breadbasket. They've had it, and they're going to have it back. I'm just being realistic here.
As far as
Mr. Putin is concerned, look at his career. I mean, his grandfather was a cook for Lenin, and after Lenin died, Mr. Putin's grandfather became a cook for Lenin's wife, Lydia Fotieva. And, of course, he went on. He was kind of a bad boy in school, and then he kind of, well, grabbed himself by the bootstraps and went into the University of Leningrad, where he was born, and then he became a lieutenant colonel in the KGB. You don't be a lieutenant colonel in the KGB and be a career in that organization and be Mr. Nice Guy.
I'm guessing I don't even think we have to guess. No, you're right. There are no soft KGB officers, were there?
Well, I mean, the ones who were got real soft real quick. The ones that they found out. I mean, look at what happened to, he was in the KGB, but Oleg Pinkovsky back in 1962. But nonetheless, I mean, Russia has their desire for warm water ports. This was established as far as Peter the Great And, of course, the other lands became a sword under Catherine and other czars. And, you know, you're just going to have to understand these people, understand what they've been through, and believe you me, they can take a lot more hardships than most anybody else. They sure as hell have had to do it. I mean, I'm just, we're not sitting around some table in England like in the remains of the day of people talking about foreign affairs as amateurs. We're in the world of realpolitik.
And, well, the thing that that gives me pause, Jim, it goes back to what was said back during the PRISM series last May, when Jeremy, and I can't remember his last name all of a sudden, pointed out that the United States has never been particularly good at the diplomacy game.
No, we haven't. We have our foreign service schools, stuff like that. However, unfortunately, our diplomats have a way of, well, I'm not trying to sound like Pat. No, I'm not going to say anything about that. Our diplomats have a lot to learn.
Well, yeah, and it makes it doubly hard when you've got the Lindsey Grahams of the world running around behind them talking about putting nooses around Russia's neck.
The noose is not around Putin's neck. It's around our neck. And the only way, I mean, we can threaten all we want to about this, that, and the other. The stock exchange went down almost 250 points today. I mean, that, and we're talking about we're going to devalue the ruble. Well, you know, two can play at that game. And believe you me, they got a lot more land and a lot more resources than we do. And they got just as many missiles aimed at us, if not more, from the RSSSR, or whatever you want to call it, or whatever it used to be called, then, well, they've got just the same amount.
Oh, goody. I was so missing the Cold War anyway.
And they've got just as many submarines and stuff like that, or enough, that were left over from Admiral Gorshkov's reign. I mean, they didn't need all those boats anyway. I mean, hell, two or three can end the world. But what I'm saying is this. We need to be more realistic and say, look, you know, if the Crimea is yours, it's yours. And if Ukraine, there's a lot of stuff between those people that we have no reason to become involved in.
And we have no what scares me more, Jim, is not the no reason to become involved in, but the no real grasp of history part.
Well, I should hope that somebody, somewhere...
Because the stupid will bust your ass somewhere along the way.
Well, I've always said on this program so many times, stupidity has a habit of getting its way. And that's the truth. But we have no business over there. I mean, you know, that's their affair. And let them handle it. And we can... you know, say this, that, and the other in the United Nations. What is that going to do? Russia and China go veto anything that goes through the Security Council, so they can't take any sanctions against them. And like I said in my email to you, and what you quoted earlier, Putin can simply just cut the gas off. And you can look at under Russian gas or GAZCOM, I believe it's on the Internet, and it shows you how many of the Western countries and the European Union depend upon Russian gas through those huge pipelines.
Oh, it just gets better and better. A resource war. Who could have imagined in the 21st century?
Well, we talk about grain. We're talking about fuel. We're talking about survival by means of heat, warmth, and food. And those are the things that really count when it comes to who is willing to sling hash at whom. And I hope Kerry has enough sense to go over there and not bore everybody to death when he starts talking to really.
Well, luckily there will be a translator involved and maybe the monotone isn't required.
Well, I mean, you know, I like John Kerry. I voted for him and whatever, but nonetheless, you know, the real deal. Well, we got a real deal. We didn't get a whole lot. But nonetheless, I just think we have enough problems in our own country without having to interfere with problems in other parts of the world. We no longer have that capability. And we are being somewhat hypocritical when we talk about making...
Wars on made-up pretexts? Yeah, that...
Well, I'm talking about, you know, bringing Ukraine, the Russians want to bring these areas back into their domination. Well, like you said about Texas, same thing. I mean, you know...
Well, that was my entire point, Jim, was to point out that this is not as clear-cut as people might like to... But if you're relying on the for-profit media out there, your ABC, CBS's...
Oh, they're just nuts.
You're not going to learn anything.
No, they're just nuts. First, they'll tell you one thing, and then, no, it was the Ukrainians who said this, not the Russians, and this, that, and the other. And I'll tell you this, and I'm going to let you go. I don't like to tarry. Mr. Putin is a very wise, very smart man. And believe you me, he knows how to get what he wants. If you don't believe it, just tweak his nose. I mean, like I said before, even during the opening ceremony at the Olympics, when one of those fools on NBC made comments about one of the torchbearers being one of his mistresses. That's real diplomacy, isn't it?
But then again, I think there's a different attitude about such things on the European scale.
Did you see the look on Putin's face when that was made? Because it showed it right on TV.
Really? I mean, he was listening to the NBC broadcast?
Well, I can guarantee you one thing. Somebody was giving it to him. He was. Yeah.
Did he have that Lubyanka look in his eye, Jim?
He looked as though he wished he could get his hands on that guy's throat. Yeah, and take him to the cellars of the Lubyanka or the Lefortovo. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are certain things you just don't say. And that's all there is to it.
Right, but the problem is the American media think that
they're impervious to anything they can say, any kind of thing they want to.
Well, not just that, but, you know, everything's Monica Lewinsky now.
I know. But like today, I mean, they came forth with that thing with the Ukraine saying they're being stormed. Russia has certain garrisons and things around that area of the Ukraine, of the Crimea. I mean, the Crimea has been there for centuries. I mean, the Tsar used to take his vacations in the Crimea, at Levadia. I mean, you know, it's their country. And like I said before, it's a huge aircraft carrier into the Black Sea. And what the hell do we have any point in putting a warship into the Black Sea? Are they looking for sturgeon?
Oh, God.
Or have we developed a taste for beluga caviar? We don't need to have that ship in there.
Let's not go slumming, Jim. Ocetra or nothing, right?
Whatever. But nonetheless, we don't need to have a ship over there for any reason. That's their territory. Respect it and deal with them as you know, they can be reasonable people. But you push them too far or a certain degree, and all of a sudden... You got something you don't want, friend.
Yeah, it's not a nice place to go marching, and we have the historical precedent to prove it.
And what assets could we place over there to make any difference?
It's 2014. It is March.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a case of the creeping horrors just looking back a century.
Well, it's still mighty cold over there in March. It sure is.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember one cropper. Well, he thought he was going to cross the English Channel. He didn't make it there.
No. And a hundred years ago, the stupid reached full bloom.
Mm-hmm. With Barbarossa. You see what happened to his ass. I mean, we just need to leave those people alone and let them sell their own affairs. And whatever happens, happens. And it's their government, and basically you're going to have to acknowledge this as a fait accompli. That is, Mr. Putin wishes to reestablish the USSR. That's what he wants. That's where he grew up. The whole thing that happened in 91 stuck like a craw in his throat.
It's his social métier?
Everything. Exactly. And he saw his country just drag through or become, you know, fall apart. And now they've learned that lesson. And so I think they're going to have a little of history's lessons. And I think they basically pay a lot more to history than we do. That's just my personal opinion.
Look, there are still couples who get married at the World War II monument in Moscow. So
of course they do. They drive up there and...
And, you know what, if we had something similar, we would not have... No.
Yes, they do. Absolutely. And they put a little teddy bear or a doll, depending on what child they want, on the bumper of their car and stuff like that. And, you know, they are a very, very firmly rooted people. And they value their soul tremendously. And I have the greatest respect for them.
I know you do.
I don't like a lot of stuff that's happened to them. But, you know, I don't have to like you to respect you.
Well, that's the truth. And a little bit of that often goes a long way. Jim, thank you very much. Stay warm, by all means. And don't order any more of this stuff, would you? We've got enough. Amex points be damned, Jim.
I'll have to talk to, never mind, my broker.
Bye now.
Good night.
Jim calling from a different frozen quadrant of West by God, Virginia. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra, what's happening?
So let me just read this one little quote. In negotiations last October, the IMF demanded that the Ukraine double prices for gas and electricity to industry and homes, that they lift a ban on private sale of Ukraine-rich agriculture land, make a major overhaul of their economic holdings, devalue the currency, slash state funds for school children and the elderly to balance the budget. In return, the Ukraine would get a paltry $4
billion. Wow, that smells a lot like austerity.
Well, it also, you know, it's like, well, they tried getting at it, you know, that was over, that was a while ago, 2 years ago. And, what's his name? Yankovic or whatever?
Yeah.
He was, you know, duly elected in 2010. And the people who overthrew him, I mean, it was a minority. I mean, the Crimea is, you know, effectively Russian. It was just sort of given to the Ukraine as kind of a part of a reshuffling. But, I mean, this is all kind of Russia, this is Russian business, you know. I mean, I don't, you know, the more I look into it, the more I just think, well, and then when I hear the IMF or the West trying to get their hands on, you know, I think the Ukraine is like the fourth largest exporter of grain in the world. So, you know, that's a pretty important asset right there.
And for instance, if Monsanto could get its hooks into Ukraine's grain production?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that, you know, there's bans on sort of private, you know, that kind of like ginormous private ownership of vast lands in the Ukraine. And, some of these people here may live in denial, but I'm sure the U.S. government is well aware of the march of climate change. So, you know, those lands could be more and more valuable as time goes on. So, I mean...
Yeah, maybe the CEO of Shell would want to move there because when other lands become uninhabitable.
You know what I mean? I'm just saying, it's just kind of, you know, I'm not all this sort of freedom, whatever the fuck they're talking about. I mean, it's a load of crap. And to hear Kerry in public talking about people invading countries under false. I mean, it's.
Yeah,
like,
did that just stop you in your tracks?
I was just like, huh? I said, motherfucker, you voted for that shit 10 years ago. You know, sit down.
Well, see, and that's, you know, that's the larger question. I got a note in here from Dr. John, Sandra, and you can take a run at it. Dr. John says, can we just accept that our goal isn't to protect democracy? And that's got scare quotes around it. And he continues, so that said, what's the larger U.S. goal here? To contain Russia so it can't interfere with our search for gas and oil in the old stand states? Do we think a strong China would be a better foe than a strong Russia? And I think those are good questions, and I don't necessarily know. I mean, what I mean, have we charted out the proposed pipelines? I mean, have we seen the secret Monsanto deal? I'm sorry to sound all paranoid, but I'm with you and Dr. John, and I have very little faith in any assertion in this country anymore of it's about freedom.
Yeah, it's never about the people, because like I just read to you, destroying those fuel subsidies, and mind you, the sort of needing to wean everyone off of fossil fuel notwithstanding, that method of doing it is totally effed up, because all the onus falls on regular people. You know, when you do those sort of doubling gas prices like that, it's a shock, economic shock therapy, and it's just a way of transferring more of that money to the same old people, as opposed to, hey, why don't we invest in, massive solar for you Ukrainian people? You you ain't going to hear that, are you?
No, because after all, it works.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So if they were concerned about the people, you wouldn't be having these horrible structural adjustment programs in exchange for a pittance. I mean, Putin was going to give them $15 billion and cut their gas costs by a third, and then all of a sudden these snipers showed up and killed up 22 people. Who are those snipers? We still don't know. But we know about that bitch saying, fuck the EU, I want you to put this, that, and the third in power, that woman from the U.S. in that phone call, we know about that. So, once again...
Well, I mean, let's back up for a minute. $15 million is almost four times more than four billion, and doesn't that $15 billion go a little bit further if you're getting gas rates cut?
Yeah, and also writing down some of you. I mean, because they're in a bad way. This is true. The Ukraine economy, but Putin has his own agenda. There's no making excuses for him. But to flip out because of the Crimea is just a bunch of BS, because that's like,
It is slightly different than rolling tanks across Poland.
Well, yeah, and it's just not even going to come to anything. I don't know. I just think that, once again, the sort of trying to make Obama out, this isn't Obama's fight, and he's approaching it completely, reasonably as far as I'm concerned. Notwithstanding the fake rhetoric, but, I did have visions of Dr. Strangelove with his 90-minute chat to Putin, Dmitry, you know what I mean? When they showed that picture of him in the White House, I'm like, Peter Sellers much? And,
don't do that to me.
Well, no, that was just the extent of that whole thing, and I just think that, Obama, he can just keep talking his way around it, on and on and on, because there isn't anything that, what are we going to do? We're not going to send any ships over there, and, I mean, it's...
Well, no, what Jim mentioned gives, again, there's a lot of things that can just give me the creeping horrors, and it, really, sending a warship into the Black Sea? What?
Yeah, I mean, who's talking like that except for the crazies, right?
But what happened the last time the crazy started talking 10 years ago, Sandra?
Well, no, there is no play money for any of this either. There's no way, the Europeans are already split on what they're going to do about it, because the UK in their secret documents that came to light today. Oh no, we don't want to deny the Russians access to the city, so. They're not going to do anything, because the financial dictators who run that country are like, oh, no, we want the money to keep flowing. So they're already split, and Germany. I mean, there's just something a bit disturbing again, historically. I know people don't have no historical sense in this country, but I don't want to know about no German chancellor, saying anything to the Russians about anything.
I know there's a real urge to say, well, would y'all stay out of this, please?
There's
bad blood.
Well, it's just too much, I mean, I'm already laughing at that. I don't know if you've seen that picture that's floating around with Merkel and Netanyahu pointing towards her, and there's a shadow over her lower lip. Have you seen that photo?
No.
It looks like it looks like Adolf Hitler. I mean, it's just hysterical. I'll tweet it to you.
Yeah, this I got to see.
It's not really describable, but it's just unbelievable. You know, so I don't have nothing against Fraulein Merkel, but I just am, you know, I don't need to hear about it. I don't need to hear about them going on some mission or, you know, trying to organize some meeting in Warsaw? You know, so all of it is just sounding real European business. I don't need to go, who's that Nazi who used to fly planes all over the place in America?
Oh.
Lindbergh.
Yeah, right.
We need to go down that route, but I'm like, you know, we can't afford it. When I heard Obama talking about, oh, the Congress needs to approve a package, I'm like, no, they need to approve a package for our unemployed here.
See, that's, I keep coming back to that.
I'm like, you know, what are you talking about? The Congress needs to do what? No, they need to provide money for the millions who are fucking, you know, I don't know what those poor people are at. We're into the third month now without them people getting that shit reauthorized. So they're destitute.
They're
just hanging on by a thread.
Oh, by the way, I've just seen the picture.
Okay.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that is. Any special?
Past
it is. I was like, I was dying. I thought, oh, my God, please. But, I don't, you know, I mean, it's complicated, but, you know, I understand that, you know, the fascists who are trying to, you know, who sort of overthrew that dude, and he's not a wonderful leader. God, you see his abandoned mansion.
Where he went to dinner in the pirate ship.
I mean, it's beyond. I don't understand why those people all have such, you know, so tacky. These sort of tin pot leaders over the top. But that's neither here nor there. I need to hear more information about the snipers, because that still hasn't been explained. And that was for real. That was like 22 people shot to death. So.
And
yeah.
Well, and we're being a little bit Pollyanna-ish, Sandra, if we don't acknowledge the presence of a hardcore ultra-nationalist right-wing fascist group inside Ukraine.
Yeah, no, I don't, you know.
I mean, it was the hardcore right-wing ultra-nationalists who were charging the barricades and stuff and taking the bullets and everything, and they weren't doing that out of some sense of patriotic altruism. Fascists don't operate that way.
Well, didn't you have, like, the specter of one of them idiots talking about, well, we can put a nuclear weapon back real quick? And I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, they're not threatening to reconstitute weapons and use it where? Right there in Europe? I mean, I just was shaking my head thinking, oh, my God, you know what? We are just on borrowed time in this world, because it's too many crazies.
It feels a lot that way. I mean, I go back to what you said about, I mean, how hard would it be with that, you know, say a few billion dollars, a few pissant billion dollars laying around? How hard would it be to solarize every rooftop in the Ukraine?
Well, I don't, you know, I mean, I figure, you know, I don't know if the Ukraine has any more sun than Germany, but I mean, Germany, at least when I was there, it ain't exactly sunny.
No, they're roughly on a parallel equal to Alaska, but the fact of the matter is they had a work, but they've dismantled that system too, Sandra. You know, the much, much famed and praised in green circles here in the U.S. Energiewende is dead. It's over. You know, which was the system whereby they gave preferential treatment to sustainable energy development and production.
Mm. When did that end?
A few months back.
Was it a sunset thing?
I'm not gonna say, but I know. Oh. I know that it came to an end. And on and just because, you know, I pay attention to these sorts of things, the Netherlands has ramped up its importation of mountaintop removal coal.
Yeah, well, I mean, all those, those Scandinavian countries, I mean, aren't they all beyond peak oil of their own resources now? So, I mean, hence the sort of riots in Sweden. I shouldn't laugh, I mean, you know, but it just was kind of like,
No, I mean, there are questions that have to be answered, that can be answered, and the folks who phrase the questions are not, you know, they're interested in questions that have answers that end in hydrocarbons. And it's,
well,
there's going to be a terrible price to pay sooner rather than later.
Well, I also am sort of, this whole Keystone thing. I mean, you know, I'm sure all the people are already, you know, chuckling all the way to the bank because that the lower half is just in full throttle.
Yeah, and, you know, how long till the first good spill? Because it was the lower half that had to be rebuilt and re-engineered, wasn't it?
Right. I'm just saying, though, but that's already moving, and, I'm sure that's going to cause untold, it's just a path-dependent situation, you know, where... once you're on that path, it's really hard to sort of break.
Well, can I ask you a tough question, Sandra? What is your gut reaction to things like the big protest outside the White House yesterday? You know, the Keystone XL protest.
Well, I mean, I don't. You know, listen. It looked like it was a fairly young crowd.
Yeah, it was almost exclusively college.
Yeah. I don't really have any, I mean, it has to come from that cohort. I don't see where else it's going to come from, Bob.
I don't either because, you know, it's their world that we're screwing up right now.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not to say that, you know, the baby boomers and such, you know, aren't like, you know, have heavy, heavy responsibility for this. I mean, it's sickening. But I'm not too sure, you know, it looks like it's going to have to be a movement that becomes, quite serious if it's going to make any dent because, I don't know.
Did you see that Chelsea apparently got arrested?
Oh, really? Oh, see, I didn't know those sort of people were mixed in on it.
They set it up so that they would have the exact number of arrestees as the current parts per million level of CO2 in the atmosphere.
Oh.
So there was like 382. They really tried to overwhelm the ability of the system to process. You know, because I remember when we sort of invented this style, whatever you want to call it, back with Appalachia Rising, they came along and said, listen, you know, you want to get some people arrested, pick out 10, 15 people, let them get arrested. And there were 100 people who said, we're all going. Yeah, all right, it's going to take all day to get you guys out.
So
but
hundreds of how many people got arrested on this?
Like 382.
Oh, right. Well.
And apparently Chelsea was one of them. And I was thinking, you know, mother is not going to be happy.
Well, and maybe, you know, sorry, I can't, once again, these people who are married to Goldman Sachs bankers, I'm always sort of like, that kind of negates whatever to me, so.
I guess I'm jaded because I had a similar response. But I see things like this, and there's something in my gut, and maybe it's a function of being a little bit older, Sandra, but there was something in my gut that said, yeah, this is great, but as soon as the 2014 midterms are over, that northern leg is so getting approved.
Well, I mean, but it still doesn't – I still think that I don't know what I mean. I think that if it may get quite serious if these youngsters are that aware of what's at stake. I mean, you know, I can see it. And it's a worry, too, because we have all these horrible laws in place to sort of, put people away for years and years. And that's the thing that's a bit of a concern. And you know, I don't know if people are prepared to sort of make those sort of sacrifices, but it may come down to that because this seems to be a bit of a war, you know? I mean, if they can't keep that carbon in the ground, if you're 25, you know, you ain't looking at nothing nice at all.
No, by the time you get to your 3 score and 10, it's going to be real interesting if you're 25.
So I just, I don't know. I mean, I, you know, and the thing that's really killing me is, you know, I always follow these, you know, it's like nerdalicious, but these blogs about the Arctic ice. And, you know, they've been having melts in February, Bob. Hello?
Yeah. I read something along that it is melting in February.
Right, and so the melt season should be really interesting this year. I mean, last year they had like more ice, and so of course everyone's but there's still it's all going pointing down to the volume that's lost, and I just been thinking if you're having sort of melt in the winter, then, what in the world's going to happen this summer? I mean, are you now looking at a summer of ice-free Arctic now?
Yeah, I mean, if it's melting in February, does that mean it boils in July?
Well, I just don't know. And then another thing that's really disturbing, which is more on the fringe because the mainstream media can't handle this, is the sort of literally boiling it underneath. And these sort of methane things that are erupting, I mean, they're getting readings that are off the chart right now for methane. And it's a worry because, you know how they said all the warmth had gone into the ocean? Well, unfortunately, yeah, and it's melting, these caltrates, these methane pools. And, that's the biggest worry going now.
Right, because what is it? Methane is 25% or more, maybe it's 25 times, who knows, more efficient at trapping heat than CO2 is.
Yeah, and also, though, I mean, there are, microbes that can be released that eats it, but... I mean, we're talking.
Yeah, but speaking of microbes, did you see that thing where the French scientists had revived a virus from the Russian permafrost?
You know what? Is that something that we even want to know about? Fuck. I mean, I don't know.
No, I posted the story over at the Horn website, and I thought of you when I saw that because the story copy had something like, Russian scientists have successfully revived an ancient virus from the from thawed out Russian permafrost. They announced the thing today and said not to worry because the virus is benign.
Yeah. So it says what, some private corporation? I mean,
Sure. And we all know that viruses, once alive, always remain in stasis. They never mutate or anything.
Oh, God. Listen, those are the stories. It's always, sort of nightmarish to me these days. I don't...
Well, it's like that story a few years ago when those folks over at, where was it, that outfit in Maryland, the Army lab in Maryland, said, hey, look, we're playing with the polio virus.
Oh, right.
Yeah, what, you want a cookie?
Oh, my God. No. It is terrible. Well, at any rate, just keep an eye on the, and the Arctic is in a bad way. It's in a terrible situation, which is why I guess they had a snow day in Washington.
Oh, well, oddly enough, my friend Kelly on Facebook, who's from around here, noted that Earl Ray Tomlin managed to shut down West Virginia state government yesterday proactively instead of waiting 7.5 hours to do it like he did with the poison in the water.
But I saw this interesting map where they showed, the East Coast in this sort of grip of coal, but the rest of the world is still as hot as hell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, when you were talking about the Arctic ice melt in February, Sandra, I immediately thought of the fact that, we've heard a lot. This winter, boys and girls, we've learned about the polar vortex, and it's all down on this side of the planet. Well, the Arctic side that isn't this side of the planet that's where the February ice melt's going down because it ain't cold.
Right, and not only that, but, I always want, when I hear a story from Valdez, I always my ears pick up because, you know, I spent some time there. And, the highway was sort of blocked by this weird-ass avalanche because everything's melting there. So the whole highway, which is the only way out of town, has been blocked off. There's a really interesting video of it. And it's just kind of like, it's not just a little bit of the highway. This goes on and on and on. And, you know, Alaska had, like, the warmest winter they ever. Like, you know.
Right.
Colder in Georgia than Fairbanks or some bullshit like that. Just,
oh, I'm sure it's colder here right now than it is in Fairbanks. I mean, I was just checking. We've got 9 and we're on the way to 2 below.
Well, anyway, I mean, you know, this is probably not very riveting radio, but I must bring up, you know, which I've seen a few stories, but I was like, hello? All them people who was murdered up in China by some knife-wielding gang. You hear about that?
Yeah, yeah. Horst brought that to our attention at the beginning of the program.
Oh, okay.
And my first thought was the NRA will, you know, say, well, if they'd had the freedom to own guns, they could have had 130 dead people.
Well, you know, it was a lot of people hurt, okay? And
yes.
22 or something killed. But the thing about it was when I first saw the story, it was a gang, and then it morphed into crazy. I'm like, no, what's going on? I mean, all of a sudden, all the gang now is just crazy. So, you know, the Chinese, they really, you never know what the hell your information you're getting, but that just looked to be horrific.
Yeah, and the BBC characterized it, the Chinese government, as saying that they were terrorists.
Well, yeah, I mean, it kept changing, because now it's terrorists. Okay, because I don't know, I didn't know how they were going to hold on to the crazy people, because that don't make no sense. But
right, because crazy people can organize 20 people to go out and...
Exactly, you know, it's just, that was just... way just ridiculous. But as you can see, I don't have nothing to say about the Oscars because I'm not going to watch a bunch of rich people congratulate.
No, that nor I, except to note that, you know, it was when I did go and watch Matthew McConaughey, that's exactly what I thought. Hey, look at the rich guy telling the rest of the world that he thanks God for getting him an Oscar. What a guy.
So he's some sort of Jesus freak?
I never knew him to be one before, but I guess he is now.
Oh, God. I mean, I didn't want to, like I said, I just sort of, what I caught on Twitter, and everyone was all, like, going on about that, and I'm like, okay. But, and then that chick who won for 12 Days and a Slave. I mean, I just thought,
12 Years a Slave, yeah.
Yeah, I know that one for the movie, but it was just, all of it was just sort of...
Well, my favorite headline of the day came from the weirdos over at Michelle Malkin's site, Sandra, because, and you know, because right-wingers do this, they were sitting there listening very carefully to see who got more applause at being mentioned when Kate Blanchett said Woody Allen or when Matthew McConaughey said God, and so there was a, you know, Z-O-M-G... Woody Allen gets more applause than God at the sick, twisted, demented... perverse Oscars. So, you know, the right wing just has this permanent outrage machine that they can queue up at any moment.
Well, I mean, but no, but I mean, they definitely are on the crazy. I mean, this the gay is driving them crazy because for them to be pushing laws like what they're trying to do in Kansasstan and
Georgia Stan.
And Arizona.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funniest part though was that when things went sideways in Arizona, Mississippi pulled back on their gay crow bill.
Well, no, but all of it is just some sort of, you know, just like I said, it's like some sort of, I don't know if it's a last gasp, because I mean it's just ridiculous. And to listen to these people contort themselves trying to explain how that would work is beyond me. Because didn't they already pass a law to prevent businesses from, you know, not serving people? Haven't we been through this one already?
We've been to this movie. But meanwhile, as far as Arizona's concerned, the bottom line is that they were protecting people against
contracting for gay marriage services in a state that does not allow gay marriage. Arizona's not a gay marriage state.
Well, yeah, but, you know, when Kentucky, no, all these states are going to be gay marriage in a minute. I mean, it's falling like dominoes. Hence, that's why the right wing are, like, freaking out.
That, Sandra, is why I hold that John Roberts is the most evilly brilliant Republican in America. Because he will give America gay marriage. And it doesn't matter if he has to sign on with Ruth Bader Ginsburg and bring poor old toddling Anthony Kennedy along. He'll cobble together a gay marriage majority and leave Clarence and Tony and what's his face to sit there and grumble in defiance. He will give America gay marriage, and my particular theory for why, Sandra, is because he knows that the minute he does, he will take a substantial part of the progressive base, and they'll go home. For the same reason that the right wing has been very effective in making sure that abortion has never been totally eliminated. Because if the right, you know, there's a substantial portion of the right-wing voting base that if abortion was criminalized, they'd crawl back under the baseboards where they came from.
Well,
do you see what I'm getting at?
Well, I mean, especially with the progressives here, because, you know, ain't nobody, I don't see the progressives pushing for an issue that they really should be pounding, you know, every social media and whatever other sort of ways they get the information out, is the denial of Medicaid. You know, that is an issue that is just astounding, and it can be used, you know, in all sorts of ways to get all sorts of electoral politics going in the right direction, but crickets. You know?
Yeah, well, that's why I said that was the first time that I said he was the most evilly intelligent Republican in the country, because, you know, by striking down the mandatory Medicaid expansion, bang, there you go, you've created a Plessyized United States where the right wingers can rally around making sure that nobody has the ability, that none of the poor get to go to the damn doctor.
Well, yeah.
But you're right. Nobody's organizing around it.
No, you know, so that's like, you know, that's why I laugh out loud when people talk about the left. Because I'm like, what left? You know, there is no
please.
In this country. It's nothing.
You know, the same, I saw a bunch of photographs of the big protest, big Keystone XL protest at the White House yesterday. And I specifically looked for one thing in all the photos. And maybe somebody will send me a photo and go, hey, you're wrong. You know, I didn't see any rainbow flags flying at the Keystone XL protest.
Well, yeah, I mean, you probably didn't see many dark people either.
No, it was pretty white.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, what the fact that the politics in this country has done an amazing, or the neoliberals have done an amazing job of separating traditional, and I put in quotes, left coalitions from dealing with bread and butter issues is astounding. Because while you can get married up here and there, you can still get your ass fired for being queer in a huge number of everywhere in this country. And that should... You know, Paul Singer ain't concerned about that bullshit.
Yeah, or how about just being able to get married up on a dying planet?
You know, but it's just, you know, I think I don't know what the progressives are thinking. And I don't know what the Democrats are sort of, they don't exist as Democrats anymore as far as I'm concerned, because they don't make movement on employment, you know? I mean, of all countries, this country, if you don't have a job, you know, it's destitution.
Absolutely. And
so I don't, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm just horrified that there's millions of people who in December they're able to pay rent and in January they're not, and they haven't been able to. and we hear nothing. That's why I was like beyond mad when I heard Obama demanding some money for some fucking foreign misadventure. Come on.
And
they should just be. It's just shameful to me. Cutting food stamps and not reauthorizing the unemployment. Come on.
And no way to deal with it by executive order, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's stunning to me, you know, weeks and weeks, every week, more and more people are being kicked off of the unemployment now. It's not decreasing, it's increasing. And I don't see no movement. I don't hear anything in Congress. I mean, they seem to...
Right, but see, that's because when you're broke... And you can't make the rent, and you can't make the car payment, and you can't make the utilities, and you can't buy food. It's right damned hard to get a whole bunch of people together to go and stand in the cold in Washington D.C. and say, you know, fix this.
Well, no, I understand that, but I mean, you know, but that, yeah, but once again, it's. This is something that has already been established, and it's just being undermined by the Republicans, but it's also being undermined by the Democrats because they're not making any effort whatsoever to, you know, address a really dire issue. To me, I'm kind of, what do they think those people are doing? That's all. I guess out of sight, out of mind, right?
They're being ignorable because they don't have a lobbyist on K Street. And I know that probably seems a little bit facile to say, but it's the damn truth.
Well, yeah, anyway, I don't know. I just sort of, you know, I don't know. I mean, I won't be surprised if they lose the Senate. That's the next thing. It's going to be, I'm going to be like, oh, well, you know.
Yeah, and you know what? If that happens in November, it is game on. I mean, I'm talking about a bill of impeachment for whatever comes into their crazy little minds in the House and a trial in the Senate.
Yeah, well, no, I just think that, that's Obama. You know, he don't seem to have a clue as to how depraved these people are. He's going to find out.
Well, I mean, how many times does he have to, and I realize we're back to the topic of Crimea and Ukraine, but how many times does he have to hear Lindsey Graham used the word noose before the damn light goes on?
Oh, my God. You know what? No, I missed that bit of...
Lindsey just said that he was tired. He said that Obama's weak and effective, and then somewhere along the way he said, we need to put a noose around Russia. And I'm sorry, if you're from South Carolina and you're in government or any sort of public position, I think it should probably be a general rule that the word noose is never a word that you use.
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, you know, how about closet? Can we use that? Oh, my God. Well, anyway, I mean, I don't know if you saw this story, and it's just, you know, and I know, you know, I'll just deny it. This isn't me on the phone. I don't know what you're talking about. But I was just rolling when I saw the story of this dumb bitch who was in a bar with her Google glasses, and that shit got snatched because they were like, I don't want you filming me, bitch. And so she called it a hate crime because her shit was taken.
What?
This is in San Francisco. Stratified class warring San Francisco. And she walking around some bar with her stupid Google glasses and some people just like, oh, no, uh-huh. And they took it from her, and then somebody ran down the road with them. I know. It's horrible. I can't. I'm sorry, but I just found the whole thing. I'm like, that's what happens when you what's that man said? I don't want to be a rich man in a poor country.
Yeah, that.
I mean, it's not the same thing, but it is in San Francisco. It's so stratified. I mean, it's just off the chain.
And they grabbed, but I just called up the story real quick. I mean, I love the nuance of it. They grabbed her Google glasses after she refused to take them off.
Yeah. Exactly. No, and you know, it's like that's going to be the problem.
Because she, you know, she's empowered to sit there, right?
You know, it's like people are going to be like, no, I don't know what you're doing. I don't want you looking at me because I feel the same way. I'm like, well, what you doing? Anyway, listen, I got to go.
I tell you what, I thank you, especially for this last one. I mean, my God, this is crazy.
I know. Okay, well, let's
all right, take care, Sandra. Be well.
Bye.
Bye now. Well, this is a Moran Monday nomination straight out of nowhere. I'm going right back to the phones. Plenty of time, well, a little bit of time left in the evening. I'm proud to announce, by the way, that we have met Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge for the evening. Thank you very much, one and all. Thank you to Brian, and thank you to Randy, and thank you to Asa, and to our anonymous friend who took care of two-thirds of the Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. It is much appreciated. Now it's the only thing that keeps us all going here. Yeah, tech writer Sarah Slocum says, this is the video that I got on Google Glass at Molotov Bar on Haight Street after being verbally accosted and flicked off by the Asian-looking girl. Yeah, let's go ahead and bonus this up real good. Asian-looking girl. I turned on the video, and after I told them I was doing so, they got pissed and came after me. So here you are, sitting in your privilege in a bar on Haight Street, and they ask, really? And you tell them, well, I'm turning on my Google Glass, and I'm Google Glassing videoing you. It's a bar! Not to play this too far, but, you know, it's San Francisco, so nobody got shot. I can well imagine that there are states where people would feel the need to stand their ground over something like that. Really? Trying to intimidate paranoid inebriated people. You know, it's one thing to oh my God. The incident reportedly started out, this according to the LA Times, as a friendly exchange between patrons at the bar, imagine that, and Slocum, who has posted extensively about the yada yada. Some at the bar were curious, asking for demonstrations of the technology, which Google sees as a new way to effortlessly connect people with information. But as the night wore on, in other words, as people drank more and more and more, a group of patrons reportedly became upset about the potential for being recorded by the eyewear. The confrontation reportedly turned violent when a friend she was with responded to one heckler by throwing a punch. Then the Google Glass was ripped off Slocum's face. But the Google Glasser is the one who is persecuted, of course. I got verbally and physically assaulted and robbed last night in the city. Had things thrown at me because of some Google Glass haters? One witness later told a television station that some in the crowd were just rather insulted that someone thinks it's okay to record them the entire time they're in public. And that's in unfathomable why? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. What's up, Jeremy?
It's Mark.
Oh, Mark. Sorry. I'm sorry. My bad.
Sorry about that.
Sometimes I miss one.
Very rarely, by the way. Just wanted to congratulate you on your appearance on MSNBC. I'm very proud of you. You were very well composed, and when given a chance to communicate, you did a great job and represented the circumstance. With conviction.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly. I hope that was not the sum total and extent of my 15 minutes, but it was fun. It was terrifying, and you wind up just hoping maybe you did some kind of good.
I think it says a lot for your show and yourself and the consistent push for honesty and integrity. And somebody got wind of you, And however you ended up there is none of my business. But any case, it was a neat. You know, you're seeing Tom Hartman's Mike Papantonio will step up for Tom Hartman, and then Malloy talks about you sometimes. You know, when you're not even communicating about him, and or he'll revert back to you in your experiences, and
yeah, I know. He accused me of being a snake handler the other night. I love that.
Malloy did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, it was. I think it was last Wednesday church night. He said, "Oh yeah, Bob knows about the snake handling."
He's got the. It's kind of neat to see a graduation of people being able to go, you know, sideways and up and down the ladder of communication or whatever you want to call it. Being able to step up, in other words, I heard Jim's call earlier tonight about the situation in Crimea. I don't disagree with Jim's conclusion, but I noticed you haven't said it yet, but I have much trepidation about the whole thing right now, and it goes back to contemporary politics, or as Jim wants to call it, real politics. But one thing that no one is and you kept hitting right around the subject, but in November of 2013. Chevron did sign a deal with the country of Ukraine for...
I've been waiting to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way in modern times that one of these conflicts evolves and mushrooms, Mark, without there being some hydrocarbons in it somewhere.
Well, and that includes... that includes Bosnia. It drove me crazy. What the hell is that? And of course, what did we get on the news all the time then was ethnic cleansing. And I've dealt with enough stuff in my life that whenever actually that would come on NBC Nightly News or whatever, I couldn't watch it because some of the horrific footage they would show you. And of course, out of that event, who I still support him as a person and his life experiences, comes the general Wesley Clark, and they did interview Wesley Clark over the weekend on CNN, and when he came back after commercial, I think he alluded to these oil deals without being specific. And then I would just share with you also the French and the Italians also in November signed a $4 billion deal. It's some form of shale oil. I'm ignorant about the subject, but and then I saw in the article where they seem to have located it. Seems to be obviously, I guess that's considered the Black Sea there, but it does seem to be not too far off the coast from the Crimean aspect. But that doesn't have anything to do with their invasion of that area, other than that's where their naval Black Sea operations are. They're able also to leave. I heard somebody, not necessarily on your show, talking today on television, that's the only way they can get in and out of their country, and that's inaccurate. They can also, the Russians also have a northern Vladivostok or whatever that's considered up north. They have a way to get out that way, which is why the American Marine Corps has a maritime prepositioning logistics base. It's non-manned in northern Norway. So when the Americans had to swing around that way. Also, you have many folks in Germany, but I have a take on it, Bob. I just, I'm not saying that that part of the country didn't belong to them and to the Russians to begin with. And, that doesn't, in my mind, they signed that agreement 20 some years ago, 24 years ago. What I think this, could be, I watched, Crazy John McCain. I just happened to catch him today. I had it on mute and I said, and then I saw it come back around on the news cycle. I said, let me, he's getting all excited. The dude's pushing. He's got to be, he's not 80, but he's pushing. And he's all fired up. He's all red in the face and he's talking to a group of idiots listening to him. And he gets the old white people in there cheering for him. And, I'm almost, you know, when McCain ran Bob in 2008, I guess it was, right? So,
yeah. Well, he ran in 404. Well, no, he ran in aught, and he ran in 08. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
he was the nominee in 08.
Well, in that time frame is what's been brought in been brought into question is the Georgia uprising, I think, and Ossetia, or whatever it's considered, and then of course George Bush Jr.'s response to that was pretty much null and void. But you know, when you did some reading about that, there's a private American corporation that is owned and ran by two chief of staffs for none other than Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, on another United States senator, I thought. They were both Republican heavy hitter administrative people that had formed their own corporation, and they were doing direct business with that fascist dictator, whatever that area is. And this is how I see the Yanukovych thing, and I think you've even touched on the subject. It's basically austerity. Sandra mentions this in her conversation. This is basically where the United States is headed. And actually, when you pay a lighter gas bill in that part of the world, which is real right close to this right here, right now in America, it's going to go to the person, not the people, but to the person who owns that. And that is that's about the only thing left that we don't have for sale almost right now. So it's really, to me, as a John F. Kennedy Democrat, this is just fascism on the march, and they have just expedited it. And I think that's why when George Bush Jr. looked the dude in the eyes, you know, not that they saw a lot in either one of their eyes, that they had a lot in common. And I'm wondering if this whole damn circumstance is not a pre-orchestration of something of some nature for political agenda. To see somebody like John McCain, this alleged war hero, to get so excited today in speaking and then have footage there. You know, we have 1,000 satellites. The United States government has over 1,000 satellites that we have immediate access to. We have satellites that can hear on Earth, let alone see everything. And so a lot of the comments that you'll see on what they call social media, since, you know, that Obama missed some very important meeting, like, dude, you have a person with something literally handcuffed to his wrist that's got the codes to nuclear weapons at all times. There's nothing.
Yeah, the football.
No. The football, correct. So, I mean, the National Reconnaissance Organization, the NRO, you can't move 1,200 people in the world without them, if they want to know, will see that, or isn't already going to be seen just arbitrarily. So when you move 150,000, that's going to require 50,000 vehicles. And it's going to require fuel consumption to get loaded up. They saw this, and actually, if you look at the timing of Sochi, and actually the beating of the punk rock girls group,
yes,
that was a clue what they were going to do. They were clamping down, and those girls knew it. And the couple professors that have been on Democracy Now had made illustrations to that point that it was all pretty much a show, and they're waiting to do this. And then that's why the protesters determined to strike then. I'm not saying that the protesters couldn't have been corroborated, didn't have some actually possibly some Putin elements in them. And I'm not correcting Sandra, but I think it was 80 people that they publicly account for being shot and killed, but not 20. But and of course they're Russians, and everybody there is Russians, whether they have a patch on or not. And we've done that too. We still do that. That's what Blackwater, Triple Canopy, Dying Corps, the Bay of Pigs. We have a lot of military things that don't have demarcations, Air America. So in any case, I'm just very dubious of it all. I know it's real. And I know that the last thing that I've seen today, and I'm not going crazy watching it, but it's hard to get the G.I. Joe out of me, that they have gotten they've gotten them to surrender what's in their armories in Crimea. Now, I don't know that and there's a demand for the soldiers, I think. I think that's considered legitimate for them to lay down their weapons by a certain hour, maybe by tomorrow morning, which would be whatever the time difference is. So, but I'm just very leery of it. It's not a high level drama game being kind of manipulated on us for political domestic purposes as well as profit for fellow fascists to operate in conjunction. And I'm not saying that they don't sell gas to Austria and to Greece and other places, but there's a lot of money laying there on the table. And they knew those deals that were going down in November. They knew about those deals 18 months ago. So this is a pretty well orchestrated operation. If we all step back and look at it, to move 150,000 people
Well, and I think we're running out of time real quick, Mark. Yeah. But just to throw one more consideration out there.
Yeah.
I can't help wondering, because I'm one of those long view history nerds. You know, it was the 17th century when the Treaty of Munster and the Treaty of Osnabrück were signed, and it's generally referred to as the Peace of Westphalia, and that established the order of the nation state in its earliest form, as opposed to empires or you know, personal autocracy or oligarchy.
Kingdoms or yeah.
And you see something, and the idea of a nation state, say as Ukraine, goes back to principles that were first enunciated at Munster and Osnabrück. And I cannot help wondering, as we see this retrenchment of empire, if we're not seeing the end of that experiment, where everybody's got to be in somebody's sphere. And ideas of nationalism are absorbed into larger ideas of empire, and the whole reason for those treaties, Mark, was because Europe had been absolutely tearing itself to pieces, and this was seen as the only way out of that bloodbath. And now it seems like we want to devolve back into what led to the bloodbaths.
Well, did I understand you, Bob? Those start in that part of the world right where they're operating right now?
Well, I mean, it touched everybody just about. I mean, it touched the German principalities. It touched the Habsburgs. It touched France. It touched Sweden. It was everybody. And granted, it's more of a Western European thing, but as it evolves over time, it creates the idea of a nation state, and so eventually, when you have as far away as across the other half of the globe, when you have countries like Mexico and Venezuela and Chile and Argentina and Bolivia and Peru and Ecuador and Colombia, becoming their own countries, it's because of an idea that was enunciated at Osnabrück and Munster.
Well, I we should be grateful for that civility. I know you got to go, Bob. I just would say I'm proud of those protesters. They did a good job of pushing back. They were very well organized, and there were a lot of veterans probably in there that knew how to handle it, which would be and you see they didn't take up guns per se. They didn't. Not saying that a few didn't shoot back, and they were smart. They handled themselves quite well. I'm very proud of their fight back. But I'll let you go, Bob.
All right, Mark, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. You have a good evening.
I appreciate you keep fighting like you do, Bob. You're very good at what you do.
Thank you. Thank you kindly.
Yeah. Bye.
Mark, calling from, I presume, Florida. Moran Monday has run right past us. Back with Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. Assuming everything hasn't frozen solid, it shouldn't. I'll keep things warm back here. Thank you to all of you who responded to Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. That was a big deal, especially in light of the fact that by virtue of how the calendar worked, we wound up pulling up short in February. Thank you very much to Asa and Randy and Brian. And thank you one and all for all you make happen. Time to get out of here. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks very much to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And yes, Rick Smith is next on the Horn.